Text fades in. Please take this moment to turn off your phones and silence any distractions. Thank you for your attention. Hulu presents a Hulu original. A title fades in and of itself. Camcorder footage plays of kids and parents at a playground. The date reads September 14th, 1989.
They ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Children stand in line in the foreground. A boy turns around and waves at the camera.
Later they ask, what do you do? Which is just another way of saying, what have you become?
The image fades to black.
It's not enough to have a name. People need something to call you.
An endless wall of cards spins to face us.
So you search.
Each card has I am printed on the top.
You look at the roles the world offers you, trying to find the one that reflects who you are.
Each card has a different label. I am an opponent, an ophthalmologist, an optimist, an organizer. In a dark room, men and women study the illuminated cards like patrons in a museum. Some cards are missing, while others lie strewn on the floor. A young woman's eyes move across the wall as she holds a card. A man points at the display as he views it.
Only a lucky few get to play the part they want.
An older and younger woman each take a card from the wall.
The rest settle for what's left, or struggle with what they've been handed.
People show their cards to one another, smiling.
Then we all learn to embrace our illusions of identity. I did.
The cards are handed to a woman in black.
I thought I knew my role.
The woman wears a headset and a walkie. She tears each card in half and hands the stub to each person. She then picks up her pile, moves through a dark space, and places the cards on a table. A light glows on the pile from above.
Then I met a man who told me who I really was.
A wood-paneled wall has six displays built into it.
And I knew he was right.
They form a circle above the table.
I just didn't know why.
Each box displays something unique. A bottle, a scale, a mail sorter, a man in a golden mask, a bundle of sticks with a wolf's head at the center, and a brick smashed into shattered glass. The room fades away, except for the illuminated cards on the table. Text appears. In and of itself was performed 552 times on a small stage in New York City. A man in a suit steps over to the pile holding a card. He tears it in half and places the stub on top. Rows of empty chairs lie before the darkened wall and stage. He glows on the dark stage as he ambles from the table at stage left to center stage. He holds the other half of the card in his hands and places it in his vest pocket.
We're here because I heard a story.
The displays glow. An audience is revealed.
5 years ago, I was in Spain visiting a friend of mine, and this friend, he took me to a small bar, and it was there that I was introduced to a stranger. And this stranger, he told me a story. He told me a story about a sailor who returned home after the Great War. And this sailor quickly discovered the only thing more difficult than fighting in a war was surviving one. Because for him, without a war to fight, he felt lost. So this sailor searched for himself at the bottom of a bottle, only to find himself with no friends, no family, no prospects. So one day at the end of his rope, this desperate man, he turned to a game of chance,
a game of Russian roulette. The game was highly illegal, but it was organized. The players would enter their names at the door. And when a player's name was drawn, they'd be escorted into a dark room full of a bunch of strangers. The strangers would proceed to place bets. They would decide the value of the player's life. Once all the bets were collected, a single bullet was ceremoniously loaded into one of six empty chambers of a pistol. The chambers then closed and spun, the pistol handed to the player, who had one job: place the gun to your head, pull the trigger. Your odds of surviving this game, winning, were 5 in 6. And if you won, you were handsomely rewarded. All your troubles were over. And if you lost...
His eyes dart from the crowd.
All your troubles were over, so... First time the sailor played, he won. But no one noticed him, and no one paid any attention to him. But the second time he played, people started to pay attention, and mostly because nobody who won this game ever came back the next day. And
the third time that this man played and won, that was the night. That was the night the people gave him the name. They started calling this man the Rulatista.
The display of the masked man lights up. The presenter walks to the back row and nods.
The fourth night, the crowd nearly doubled in size. Word spread of this guy. And people just wanted to see what the fuss was about. So again, the people, they all placed their bets. And again, he played.
The puppet in the display raises a gun to his head.
Click. And again, he won. It was about this time people started to speculate, okay, maybe this guy figured out a way to cheat at this game. Or maybe the organizers of the game, they just rigged it for him to win, you know, drum up some promotion for their own business. So people got smart. They stopped betting. They stopped playing altogether. So the Rulatista, without anyone asking him to do this, he said he'd be willing to add a second bullet to the gun. So people took the bet, and again he played.
The puppet raises the gun to its head.
Click, and again he won. He agreed to add a third bullet. This time, no one really cared if he was cheating, you know? People just wanted to be able to say that they got to place a bet against him.
The puppet raises the gun to its head.
Click. He added a fourth bullet and a fifth. Eventually, he agreed to add a sixth and final bullet. Yeah, nobody bet. No, instead, they just bought a ticket to watch. You know, watch a man stand on a stage and place a loaded gun to his head.
A drawing shows a man with an obscured face aiming a gun to his head. There is writing behind him.
Believe it or not, for the first time in 100 years, there was an earthquake in that region. The building shook so hard.
A drawing shows a beam falling on his back.
A beam fell right from the ceiling, knocked the gun right out of the Rulatista's hand.
The puppet lowers its hand.
He took this as a sign. That was the night he retired. But he was wealthy at this point, though, so he got married.
The presenter steps towards the stage.
He had some kids, got himself some grandkids. He lived in the biggest house on the highest hill in his town. People, when they saw him, they would cross the street just to come shake the man's hand or to get the hell away from him. He was a living legend. One night he was asleep in his bedroom. He heard someone downstairs rummaging around. He went down to investigate, only to discover a burglar was down there trying to break into his safe. The burglar stood up and pointed a gun at the Rulatista.
A gun is aimed at the puppet.
Rulatista looked back at the man and said, "Do you know who I am?" Burglar replied, "No."
A drawing shows the man bleeding on the floor.
Fired a single shot. Killed the Rulatista right there in his own home.
On stage, the presenter stares at the ground before his eyes move up to study the audience.
That's it. That's the story.
A woman looks at the person sitting next to her.
This is a story the stranger told me at this little bar, and I looked at him and said, "That's a fascinating tale, sir. Why did you tell me that? What made you think of this?" And he looked at me and in all seriousness replied, "Because you are the Rulatista." I had my friend translate that. Perhaps I misunderstood him. And he just repeated himself. "No, you are the Rulatista. I just thought you should know." And he left. And that night, I stared into a mirror trying to see the man that he saw, but all I could see is the same thing I see every single day. I've retraced the footsteps of that encounter over and over again, looking for clues as to why he might have said that. I didn't say but two words to him. I wasn't dressed like a sailor. Yeah. I didn't put a gun to my head. So what was it? What did he hear that I didn't tell him? Or what did he see in me that I didn't show him?
He turns and gazes at the glowing display of the motionless Rulatista. His gaze shifts to the display of the bottle as it gleams. The stage darkens as he glances from the ruletista to the bottle. He steps to the bottle and watches as a blue light glows on the wall at the center of the displays. He reaches into the display and grabs the liquor bottle. He watches as the light behind the ruletista fades. He studies the displays, then looks at the bottle in his hand. He clenches the cap, turns it, but doesn't remove it. The audience watch in silence as he studies the label and peels it off. He steps back and places the half-full bottle on the table. His eyes never leave the label as he brings a folding chair to center stage and sits down.
You think this is a performance?
He holds the label to the audience and folds it.
You see a man in a theater. There's an audience. His lines are memorized, his actions are rehearsed.
His fingers shift as the label's shape changes. Audience members grin as they watch in shadow.
It is difficult to see past what this looks like.
His fingers stop as he holds the sailboat-shaped paper.
Hell, it's easy to lie on a stage. It's even easier to lie in a film.
He stands, turns to his chair, and squats. He holds the paper in front of a light and rolls the boat side to side. The shadow of the sailboat appears on the wooden wall. Its shadow moves along the shadow of the chair's rail like the sea. He rises to his feet.
I do not expect you to believe anything you're seeing or hearing. And knowing you won't believe me, that's the only reason I'm going to tell you the truth.
He licks his finger and rubs it on the sailboat. He then sticks it to the chair's rail. The top point of the boat creates a shadow against the wall. He takes the bottle and holds it in front of the light. The bottle's shadow eclipses the boats. On the wall, it appears the ship is inside the bottle, sailing gently along. He stands and takes the bottle away.
You do have a choice, though. You can see it for what it is, or you can imagine what it could be.
He moves the bottle along the rail, and the ship is now physically inside the bottle. A man smiles and cocks his head as the presenter looks at the bottle and grins. He turns and looks up at the displays. He gazes ahead in thought, nods, and glances at the bottle. He steps back to the bottle's display and holds it perpendicular over its rectangular platform. He takes the bottle back and glances across the wall. He smashes the platform with his other hand, revealing it to be made of sand. A person gapes as he spreads the sand into a mound. He flicks the sand from his fingers into the display box. He places the bottle sideways into the sand. He sweeps away the sand that covers the front and sides of the bottle. The presenter watches the scene as an orange spot of light glows behind the bottle. It spreads across the whole display, then it goes dark like a setting sun. His focus is broken as the entire stage brightens. He mouths a word as his eyes move along the other displays. He turns to the audience.
I need someone to come back tomorrow.
People in the audience glance at one another. He gawks at them, then opens his mouth.
Okay.
He glances back at the bottle.
On every ship, there's a book. And this book is called A Ship's Log. And it was a sailor's job to write down everything that happened on a journey. They were supposed to write it down inside of this book. But long before modern instruments, this book, it wasn't just a record of the journey. It was a really important part of navigation because sailors used the stars and the sun to navigate. They would determine their location, and then they would write those coordinates down inside of this book. But from time to time on a journey, sometimes clouds would fill the sky, and it would be impossible for them to determine where they were. But on these days, they still needed to make an entry in this book. So on these days, Sailors were forced to imagine where they were, and they had to write that down, and they relied heavily on the previous entries to help keep them on course. Eventually, the clouds apart, they'd find the stars again, get back on track, arrive at their destination. But the end result for that book, it told an honest story of the journey that had taken place, but it was composed entirely of information that was both real and imagined.
He peeks at his palm.
We have a book, and in order for it to continue, I would need one of you to come back to our next performance.
The audience members look to their right as one hand after another shoots up, 8 hands raised throughout the crowd.
All right, sir. I see you raising your hand here.
A man points to himself.
I should point out, I'm serious. Are you comfortable with me referring to you as Mr. Tomorrow, just for clarity's sake?
He nods.
Okay. Tomorrow, you will now be responsible for the most terrifying moment of the performance for me. It's the moment when I ask this question. Did the person from the last show come back?
A woman raises her hand.
This Miss Yesterday. Welcome back, Miss Yesterday. Hi. Come on down.
A montage shows different men and women walking on stage. Each of them holds a 5-inch thick tome. The presenter shakes their hand and takes the tome from them.
Thank you very much. Welcome back. Sorry, he's aware of this. The rest of you probably are not. This is the only time I ever get to look at this. So if you just indulge me for a moment, I handed this out on our very first performance. This has gone out to sea with someone else each and every day since, and it's remained out there, but it's always, always managed to find its way back to me in this moment. I've been asking people to document what they've been witnessing in here, and some people...
He reads a page.
Some people have made some really interesting artistic decisions in this process. Holy shit.
A page unfurls.
Derek seemed to have a sadness in his eyes. And the
woman beside him laughs.
These are the first 2 pictures ever pasted in here. Pictures of the rappers Ice-T and Ice Cube.
He shows it to the audience.
Oh, that was a good one.
An origami flower page.
Bit of an overachiever there. She interlaced it with lyrics from the musical Hamilton.
Derek mouths a word and shuts his eyes.
Hosted no guy, he just went through the book and talked shit about everyone else.
He shrugs and exaggerates a frown.
Did you see the elephant last night?
Excuse me?
Did you see the elephant last night?
We talked about the elephant.
I know, but with your eyes, did you see it?
My literal eyes?
Yeah, literal. No. It's not a trick. You didn't?
No.
Okay. There will be an elephant here a little later on. It was right before we threw you out. We threw him out of the show last night. He did not see the end of the show. She still has not seen the end of the show because we booted her out of here before it was over. So. You have that to look forward to, Mr. Tomorrow. There will be a reason for your sacrifice tonight. There was a reason for his in the last show. Because of it...
He wags a finger.
You're going to ensure this story doesn't end. Instead of letting it end today, I'm going to have you take it with you. And instead of seeing an ending, I'm going to ask you to imagine one and write that down, which is what I asked her to do in the last show. Is this your ending here?
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard this yet. I'll be hearing this with all of you for the very first time. What did you choose last night?
Last night was Pathfinder.
Pathfinder, all right,
He points at the page.
This is how our Pathfinder, our traveler, our novelist, our contrarian, our observer, our heretic, our warrior, our producer, our gift, our clown, our father, imagine this story ends. Secret agent, stage is yours. All I ask is loud enough so they can hear you.
Right.
Thank you.
He hands the book to a yesterday woman.
By the time I left...
A yesterday man reads.
I can't read my own damn
hand. This is the scary part because I know this is the part I will have to read in front of everyone. But I don't have all day to spend time on a writing assignment I got from a show that I paid to see. So here goes nothing.
How did it end? A bright flash, music, crescendos, then silence. On the scale where Derek once stood is a full-grown elephant. The scale...
He raises his eyebrows at Derek and makes an okay sign.
It's gonna be great.
Every person will find love. No one will be judged. Our I ams will become we are.
Etwas, das uns am Ende des Abends für 75 Minuten alle Geschehnisse außerhalb dieses Raums vergessen lässt. Als wären wir in einem geschützten Butterfly-Kokon.
Butterfly, I got Butterfly. That one.
Yeah.
The Ruletista made the mistake of being defined by the six chambers of the revolver. And although Derek is described by the six chambers along the backdrop, he should not be defined by those six chambers.
People describe my parts, my facets, but do they ever really know the whole me? How could they when I, like Derek, hide an ugly truth, my secret, when it should be my pride?
When I walked in and had to choose my identity card, I started to panic.
He cocks his head and grimaces.
I'm not great at making decisions, so naturally I hesitated and overthought things. My constant fear crept up, what if I choose wrong? Without realizing it, I was saying to myself, I don't think I know who I am.
A further introspective note. We all label ourselves and live according to our label. But while I am an accountant, as are thousands of other people, there is only one me. No one else has lived every single one of my experiences. I am not a label. I am a sum of all parts.
We are all the unreliable narrators of each other's stories.
A montage of pages, writings, drawings, diagrams, and sheet music cover them.
Based on the little that they know, they're asked to imagine how this story ends. And it's that blank page. It's that blank page of here's everything you know, everything you've just heard, everything you've seen. Now what? What are you going to fill it with? And it's just like the person sitting next to you, across from you. What do you know about them? What have you heard? What have you seen? What are you going to put on their blank page? And it's that responsibility that book presents to people, is the responsibility. We are all writing one another's stories.
The pages flash by faster and faster. One has a photo of a half of Derek's face. Another has a colorful collage of random images. One person drew faces on ink stains and made a comic.
The Ruletista. Aren't we all gambling pieces of ourselves daily? Don't we all have something to lose? How do you know when you're holding a loaded gun?
A montage of the yesterday people standing with a closed tome. A bearded man smirks, a woman smiles and blinks with tears. Another woman gives Derek a huge toothy grin. He takes the book from a woman and shakes her hand. She plods back to the shadowed audience. Derek looks in the book, nods, and places the bookmark strand from the binding onto the page. He looks over his shoulder and stares at the Ruletista. He shuts the book and holds it against his chest. The Ruletista's frame darkens as he steps stage right and places the wall. A soft orange glow paints the stage from the right like a fading sunset. Derek furrows his brow as something to his left catches his attention. A woman watches with her eyes half shut and head tilted back.
There's a light.
He points at the source, which covers him in a warm glow.
This light happens every day.
He grins.
It happens at the same time every single day.
He turns to the audience and creases his brow.
If you stare out towards the horizon, right as the sun hits it, you're going to notice it's very difficult to decipher anything that's standing between you and the sun.
Derek stares at the light with pursed lips.
This time is called the time between dog and wolf.
The display with a wolf's head glows. He leans on a ladder beside it.
This expression, the time between dog and wolf, it comes from the Middle Ages. It was a cautionary expression that parents would use to scare their children. Make sure that they got home before it got dark out. You better get home before the time between dog and wolf. At this time of day, it's very difficult to distinguish a friend from a foe at a distance. It's hard to tell the difference between a dog and a wolf, and by the time it gets close enough to you for you to make out what it really is, it's too late.
He glances at the wolf and cocks his head. Its jaws hold a deck of playing cards.
I never saw this as a dangerous time, though. I always saw this as a time of possibility. You know, it's a very specific moment for metamorphosis. For me, this was the time when a dog could also be a wolf.
His head twitches to the wolf. He snatches the playing cards from its porcelain white head. He spreads the deck in his hands and looks at the cards.
I'll never forget the first time I saw someone perform sleight of hand. I'd like to say it was love at first sight, but I fell in love with all the things I couldn't see, and I had to learn. So I started with the very basics. How do you hold a deck of cards properly? And then I read it would take 8 years to learn how to hold a deck of cards properly. 8 years. And which grip are you going to learn to hold them in?
He ambles downstage and holds the cards up in one hand.
You going to learn the mechanics grip? Full grip, straddle grip, box grip, dealer grip? I couldn't decide, so I just learned them all. Taught myself how to shuffle, and you take one, and another, and another. Eventually, I could speed up, start throwing as many as I'd like. I learned the variations on these things, taught myself the cuts. I learned how to do them one-handed. I taught myself how to riffle shuffle using my leg.
He places the deck on his raised right thigh, then splits the deck and riffle shuffles. He looks at the audience and shrugs.
Eventually, I didn't need my leg, but I always threw in a bridge.
He bridge shuffles.
You know, I wanted people to know I had been practicing. You gotta put it to good use, so you start finding cards. Do you remember your cards, sir? 10 of spades? You're welcome.
He reveals the card.
Okay, and then what about you, miss? Do you remember your card? The 6 of hearts, all right. From the 10 to the 6, and you there in the third row. Do you remember your card?
He takes the card and holds it on his leg.
You didn't have a card. That's all right, we can do that.
He brushes his leg with the now empty hand.
But I wanted credit for all this stuff, though. So you start throwing in the flourishes, learn how to spring the cards. That'll get them every time. That way they know you're professional. That way they know you're working. But you start to question that, and you think, well, maybe they'd like a waterfall more. I mean, that's a bit more nuanced. It's a little more elegant. Same thing with a fan. You learn a thumb fan, and then you think, you know what? Maybe they'd like a pressure fan more. I mean, that's got something a little extra to it. And what's better than a fan? I know, 2 fans.
The deck is split.
After you learn this, it's mandatory you get that headshot.
He crosses his arms and smiles with the splayed cards in each hand.
I loved it. I loved it so much, and I shared it with other people.
He looks at the spread deck.
And then it was like...
His gaze turns to the crowd.
It was like the more I shared it with others, the more disillusioned I became, and I didn't understand that. Now looking back, I can see that other people just couldn't appreciate what I appreciated about it. It's not their fault. It's not my fault either. It's nobody's fault. The other people literally couldn't see what I saw.
His hands freeze as he looks off far away.
But then I met someone who could.
The stage goes dark as a light beams down on the wolf's head, casting its eyes in shadow.
Hey, Wolf.
Yeah?
Hey, it's Derek.
So?
Yeah, so is it cool if I record this conversation?
Yeah.
Okay, so the last time I saw you, you told me about the first time you saw him?
Yeah.
Can you tell me that story again?
So, I'd got me into this game. It's a game my older brother used to play in, and I'm sitting in this game next to this guy, and we're playing. And at the time, I hadn't been in too many card games. At that time, I was mostly fucking around with dice. But I'm in this game, and I'm next to this guy. And I ain't never met this guy before, but at that time, I ain't never met a lot of people. So I'm sitting there, and he leans in the bed. Now, he's confident, but real sloppy. So he leans forward to bet, and I see what he's holding. He's just being lazy.
He has 2 twos.
And I think to myself, I got this motherfucker beat. Only problem now was keeping him in the hand. I didn't want to scare him off, know what I'm saying? So I raised, and he raised, and that shit went back and forth. And I'm doing my best not to laugh at him, because I know this motherfucker ain't got shit. But I'm playing it cool. And I go all in. He calls. And we roll over our hands.
The wolf reveals 2 queens. The man plays 2 kings.
And he had me beat. Now I'm thinking, am I hallucinating? Because I know what I saw. But then when it ain't there, I start to think I'm losing my mind. And I look up at this motherfucker, and he's smiling right at me. And he knew, and he's smiling. That's when I knew he was the devil. And I wanted to be just like him.
Derek sits at the table.
And I wanted to be just like him. So he taught me. So I learned. I remember him saying to me, okay, Derek, all that time you spent learning to become a dog, all that razzle-dazzle you've learned, you can forget it, because dogs like to please people, and we're not about that. So from now on, you're going to shuffle cards like we shuffle cards, you're going to deal them like we deal them, and you're going to learn to be invisible. You can start by getting yourself a new name. Make sure you pick a name that's easy to remember. So I thought about it for a little bit. I went with the name Cody. Cody is my middle name. I figured that'd be very easy for me to remember.
He flips a card at the top of the deck.
King of Spades.
He puts it back and shuffles.
It turns out that's actually really good advice. Pick a name that's easy to remember, because the last thing you need is to be sitting at a card table and shuffling, dealing, playing cards, having a grand old time with a bunch of strangers. And then someone you don't know says what's supposed to be your name a few times and you don't respond. You can't be sitting at these tables trying to remember what your name is. You got other things on your mind, more important things to be keeping track of. Things like that King of Spades, which is now 17 cards from the top.
He splits the deck.
There's 16. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, King of Spades. I remember him saying to me, okay, Cody, listen, when you sit down to deal, there are a few things you're going to need to remind yourself from time to time. One of those things, some of these guys sitting at these tables, some of them are just going to be staring at your hands while you're dealing. And if you ever notice that, you got to just stay calm, stay focused, do your job.
He shows the King of Spades at the top of the deck and places the four top cards face down on the table.
You gotta understand, kid, even if they're staring at your hands, they can't see what you're doing. And they can't see what you're doing because they don't even know it exists.
The top card on the deck is the King. He puts down four more cards.
And they don't know someone like you exists. And they're just staring at your hands because they're waiting for their next card. These guys are gamblers. They're always just gonna be sitting there waiting for their next card.
He flips the King on top of the deck.
But you have to believe me when I tell you they cannot see that you're a wolf.
As he places more cards on the table, he reveals the King as the top card on the deck.
It didn't take long for me to realize on most nights one card was not going to be enough. On most nights you needed to find at least two. And on those bad nights...
He shows a second King.
Three. And on those really bad nights, all four.
After shuffling, he plays four kings from the top of the deck.
I remember him telling me, look, kid, when you beat these guys, they're gonna get pissed. You learn to accept it now that they're gonna get upset. It'll be a lot easier for you when you're actually sitting with them, and then you hear these guys start to whine about losing.
He puts cards on the table.
When you hear them start to bitch and moan, or when they start yelling or making threats. I mean, you gotta understand, kid, some of these guys might have the nerve to accuse you of cheating. And if that ever happens, you gotta take a moment and remind yourself of the truth. They just lost all their money. So they're furious, and you're one of the only people in the world that they can take that out on. They don't know that you're a wolf. After their shuffles, they always insist that you pass the deck so someone else can give it a cut. I guess they thought this sort of procedure would keep the wolves at bay. I don't know. I remember being told, look, you gotta let them have those types of illusions, Cody.
He splays the deck out with four kings in the center.
You always want them to have their illusions.
He nods.
Four kings.
He scoops up the cards.
From the middle.
He stacks the deck in one sweeping motion. He takes cards from the top of the deck, creating four piles of four face-down cards and one pile of four face-up kings. The stack of kings lies closest to him behind the four stacks.
It didn't seem to matter how well I did, though, how hard I tried, how proud I tried to make him. Whatever I had, he always insisted I give him a better hand.
He flips each card in the fourth pile, each being an ace.
That at the end of the day, is the problem I found with hustlers. These guys, they really only care about one thing, you know, money. And the sad truth is, you can make as much money on any given night with one move. One great move can win you the same amount of money as every move combined. So a lot of these guys, they only bother practicing one thing. And some of them become the best in the world at one thing.
He stares off into space and his eyes twitch to the left.
I spent most of my youth tracking those few men down, asking them to teach me what they've learned. And I learned a lot of great lessons from them, but the best came when I was 17 years old. I got on a Greyhound bus, I went to Denver, Colorado, looking for the man when it came to one thing. I found him at a pool hall, introduced myself. After some convincing of why someone like me would be looking for someone like him, he took me into a room in the back where there was a card table, and he set a deck in front of me. He said, "All right, kid, let's see what you got." This was like the old gunslinger testing the kid, you know, see how fast he is. I didn't hesitate. I took the cards, I started shuffling, and I'm sitting there looking down at my hands thinking, "Oh, wow, this looks good. I've been practicing." And I finish my shuffles, and I look up from my hands to see he's now holding a gun.
Derek points a finger like a gun.
And he says, "Just hope they get you in the heart, kid." And what he was doing was teaching me a valuable lesson, which is if I were ever to attempt these sort of things at a card table with strangers for money, I better make damn sure that I'm not sitting there with them just staring at my own hands and admiring my own work. So he taught me how to practice. I've practiced everything this way since, and I will share it with you as I try to run up a decent hand for his favorite game.
He slips off his tie, unbuttons his collar, and wraps the tie over his eyes.
Bridge. Now, the idea here in theory is pretty straightforward. Specific cards get shuffled into specific positions, hopefully. In this case, we're looking for as many of the spades as we can find so that in a moment, when I'm dealing, the deals can be fair because right now it's the shuffles that are crooked.
He stacks the cards neat, splits the deck, and riffle shuffles. He shuffles two more times. He cuts the deck, puts it in his left hand, and runs his right over the black felt table. Derek plays three face down cards and shows the fourth to the audience.
All right, we'll see how we do. A spade. Spade.
He repeats the act.
Spade. All right, we'll just see how many we missed.
His fingers dance as he snaps cards onto the piles. Every fourth card is a spade. He drops his right-hand palm down on the felt. In a black and white reenactment, gruff men gawk at the dealer's hand in a smoky room. Back at the show, Derek takes off his blindfold.
Yeah, okay, good. No, I finished this before. I've had people say, "That's awesome," but they're not in order.
Derek stares blankly at the audience.
Which, you know, I would have done for you folks, but I had a fucking tie on my face, so.
A man in the crowd makes a toothy grin.
For any perfectionists that might be here.
With the three piles still on the table, Derek holds the spade card spread out and facing him. His brows and mouth twitch as he studies the cards in his hand. He lowers his hand and stacks the cards.
Using those deals from earlier, starting with the ace of spades, you should be able to bring it home like this. Ace, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, jack, queen, king. Now they're in order.
He gazes at the ordered spade cards.
It really does seem like no matter how long it's been or how hard I try.
He stares off in thought.
I've still got a whole lot of wolf in me.
He spreads the spades to the right of the three piles. He takes one face-down pile. He spreads the ordered pile of hearts. Then he reveals the ordered pile of clubs, followed by the diamonds. A woman gapes at her friend. As he gathers the hearts, the light to his right glows brighter. He looks at it.
It's true, you stare out towards that horizon, and it is very difficult to decipher anything that's standing between you and the sun.
He raises his brow at the cards on the table.
But if you are willing to turn your back on the sun...
He gazes at the three remaining piles.
Everything else is illuminated.
The display of a brick smashed into blue glass glows brighter. Derek, turned in his chair, furrows his brow at the display. He rises from his seat, adjusts the cards on the table, pops his collar, and tugs on his vest. He steps towards the bright display on the dark stage. The Ruletista's box lights up. The glow in the displays fade as light returns to the stage. A purple hue blankets the wall except for the center and along the floor. A circular radiance etched with shadow encompasses the empty space at the center of the displays. Derek stands motionless, gawking at the shattered exhibit. He glances at the audience, raises his brow, and grins.
Every secret has a unique weight to it.
He looks to the audience, then to the display, and then at the floor. He raises his brow.
I learned this at an early age. My mother.
Derek steps downstage and addresses the audience. He presses his lips together and swallows.
My mother. She had me when she was only 17 years old. And my father, he was a little bit older than she was, but he decided to split town. Right when he found out she was pregnant. But my mother, she managed to work I don't know how many jobs and go to school, and she still somehow found the time to tuck me in at night. I mean, she found the time to read me bedtime stories. And...
He frowns, shaking his head.
I honestly don't know how she did it by herself for so long. But when I was 6 years old, that all changed. I don't remember if I was already asleep or about to fall asleep, but I do vividly remember being thirsty. So I remember grabbing my little cup off my nightstand, leaving my room, going down the hall past the living room to discover, oh, hey, the TV's still on. And there on the couch is my mother kissing another woman. And this for me is confusing. My mother, she sits me down. She introduces me to a very nice lady and proceeds to gently explain the nuances of love between two human beings.
He squeezes his ring finger with his thumb and forefinger.
I cried myself to sleep that night. And not because she told me she's gay, but because that's the night I knew I would never have a father. She was happy. I was happy. I mean, for the first time in our lives, we were enjoying the comforts of a nuclear family.
Camcorder footage plays of a woman sitting with a young boy on a couch. The woman speaks at the child and plays with the kid's short hair. The kid grins toothily and claps his hands. Derek walks to a chair beside the shattered display.
My best friend at that time was a neighbor kid. His name was Ryan, and my playtime with Ryan consisted of riding bikes, playing tag.
He grabs the tome and sits down.
We used to pretend we were pirates in a sandbox. One day I told my best friend, Ryan, about my new mom. And the next day Ryan told me he couldn't be my friend anymore. That's what he was told. And then I remember coming home from school and finding a Bible on my doorstep. And I remember hearing the sound of glass shattering and then finding a brick. And I remember hearing picketers and learning the words faggot and queer and dyke. And learning all three of those words meant the same thing. Mom.
Camcorder footage shows the woman holding up a young boy against her chest in a driveway. She pats the kid's back as the boy wraps his arms around her neck.
We moved. Right after that. And I learned...
He purses his lips and frowns.
I learned how to keep a secret. How to...
He sets down the book and rises.
Protect one. How to create one. I started to use language I could hide in to avoid all discussion of life at home.
He nods and gazes off in the distance.
And I developed rituals. If a new friend were to come over to my house for the very first time, I would ask him politely, hey, do me a favor. Wait outside here at the front door. I'm gonna go inside. I wanna make sure the house is clean for you. And cleaning meant me running around the house, hiding all the rainbow flags and Indigo Girl CDs and, you know, hiding anything I thought might expose me for who I wasn't.
Derek turns to his left and ogles the floor.
Hiding all of the evidence of my mother's pride.
An audience man listens intently.
I got really good at that.
Derek turns back to the audience while grinning.
Then I remember Lindsay, this girl from school. I remember summoning up every ounce of courage I had in me to ask her whatever dance it was. And she telling me she couldn't because she heard from one of her friends that my mother is gay. How did they know? I mean, how did everyone find out? I had been so careful.
He frowns at the floor, shakes his head, and raises his brows.
After that, my secrets were replaced with go fuck yourselves.
He raises his middle fingers.
I'd like to think that this honest new disposition came from a place of maturity, but...
He waves his hands, studies each finger, then lowers them.
It was exhaustion, because every secret has a weight to it, and you can only carry them for so long.
Members of the audience observe Derek in the dim yellow light. Derek turns around and regards the wall. He steps over to the lit shattered display. He pulls the brick from the glass and the light leaves the box. He studies it. Derek tosses the brick onto the wood panel floor. Once it hits the floor, a white spotlight shoots down on it. Derek is frozen like a man who's afraid to take a step. He cocks his head and smiles slightly. He steps to the brick and kicks it onto its flat side. He bends his head while studying it. A toothy grin appears on his face as he looks to the audience. His smile fades as he continues to survey the shadowy crowd of people. He glances near his foot.
This is just a brick.
He nods slightly at them with raised brows. A woman in the audience presses her lips into a frown. He picks it up. Its gold paint glimmers in the light.
This is just a brick. But it's gonna be very difficult for any of you to see it that way anymore. This brick was painted gold. And it was placed on this stage.
Derek gazes at the floor.
And I just told that story. I mentioned a brick in that story. I sat right here next to this brick when I mentioned it, so it's...
He frowns at the floor.
It's gonna be very difficult for any of you to see this as just a brick now, because you know too much. You know that story, and that is what you will think of now when you look at this.
Derek holds up the brick with one hand. A woman in the audience leans her head toward the man next to her. Their eyes are transfixed to the stage.
Sorry.
He looks down, smiles, and turns to his left. Something catches his eye.
I can help with that.
He steps over to the table and drops the brick on it. Derek sits down and moves the brick in front of him. The pile of playing cards lies between him and the brick. He gazes at the brick and taps his finger on it. He glances to his right and nods at the cards. He takes two cards and places them over a corner of the brick. He takes a third and places it across the corner on top of the two. He repeats this with another corner. A bright white orb shines down on him from the ceiling over the audience. Derek covers the other corners and places a third card, which connects the two corners on each short side of the brick. He places the rest of the cards at the corner of the table. He then takes a heap of the labeled cards from earlier.
Someone here is a tourist.
He shows it to them.
Tourist, wherever you are, please raise your hand.
A hand flies up at the far end of the stands.
Hey, tourist, could you please name an avenue in this city that we'd all recognize if we heard it?
Avenue A.
Avenue A, that might work. Someone here is an idiot. Idiot, wherever you are, please raise your hand.
The audience members swivel their heads as no one raises a hand. Derek grins as he searches.
That's about right. Someone here is a film buff. Film buff, wherever you are, please raise your hand. Hey, film buff. Could you please name a street that intersects with Avenue A that we'd be familiar with if we heard it?
Third Street
and Avenue A. Thank you both.
Derek places playing cards along the open sides of the brick. He then places cards flat on top of those.
We all start so pure. There's no information that's tainted our experience of what it means to be human, and what we know about this world is just pure. It's what actually is. And then slowly but surely, opinions are thrust upon us and knowledge is put in our head, and we're given ideas and we start to make associations between what's good and bad and what a good person is and what a bad person is. And it's all that knowledge that conceals what a thing is.
He stands. The brick is concealed with playing cards, but a small rectangular opening lies on the top. He aims an open hand at the brick.
That brick is now on the corner of Avenue A and 3rd Street. And it's sitting there right there on the corner, and people are walking right by it. People are driving right past it. And if you go there, just look, just observe, and you're gonna notice not a single person stops to look at that brick. Not a single person takes a moment out of their day to look down at the ground and go, oh, hey, there's a gold brick here on the corner of Avenue A and 3rd Street. What is this brick doing here? Nobody does that. And
he makes a fist.
Nobody takes that moment out of their day to acknowledge that brick's existence because they don't care. And they don't care because they don't know anything about it. They don't know where it's been. They don't know its story. Only the people in this room know anything about that brick right now. And to everyone else on the planet, that's just a brick.
Derek stands motionless as audience members fidget.
Which it is.
He lowers his hand onto the table, brushing it with his fingertips.
It's just all in how you look at it.
He leans down. The cards fly apart like leaves in the wind, no brick.
How's that feel, honey?
Camcorder footage plays of a boy jumping through a sprinkler. Derek turns and looks at the shattered glass with its rectangular hole at the center. He glances at the ruletista, then steps away. The ruletista lights up. He looks back at it and places his hands on his hips. Something to his right catches his attention. He steps to the table and takes a stack of the labeled cards. He holds the cards towards the ruletista and its light fades.
Nobody move. Nobody make a sound. Can you please choose somebody for us?
He shows the cards to a spectator.
Who'd you get? You see it?
Derek takes the card back.
Okay. Nobody move, especially not the stabilizer, the gentleman, the czar, the mediator, the teacher.
A montage plays.
What does a reflection look like? You don't need to think about it. We have one here.
He holds up the card.
Reflection. Wherever you are, please raise your hand. I promise no harm will come.
Holding the card up, Derek scrutinizes them.
Hey, Reflection. Could you please stand up?
A short-haired blonde woman rises.
And if you could just turn around real quick. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what a reflection looks like. Thank you very much, Reflection.
She spins and smiles before sitting down. A huge grin grows on Derek's face as he glances off in thought. The smile fades when he looks back at the card.
There's a story you should know.
The top right mail sorter displays lights up as he steps in front of the table.
There's a story all of us should know. The story is about these six dudes. And these dudes, they're walking through a field.
He strides stage right.
And they come across the thing.
He clasps a ladder leaning on the wall.
And they don't know what this thing is. So these guys decide, instead of just moving along, instead of just minding their own damn business, these guys decide they're gonna stop. They're going to investigate, and by God, they're gonna figure out what this thing is. There's a problem with their idea. All six of these guys are blind. And even though they're all touching the same thing, they're all touching a different part of it. So each guy thinks it's a totally different thing. For instance, the guy at the front of this thing, he's touching this part, feels all long and round, gets thicker towards the top. It's kind of rough, almost scaly.
Derek runs his hand over an invisible tube.
It's wet at the tip. Oh, hey guys, back up, it's an enormous snake. The guy at the opposite end, at the back end, he feels something similar but different. It is long and round back here. It's not very thick though. It's kind of the same width all the way up. It's fuzzy at spots. It's fluffy at the end. Hey man, it's not a snake. It's just rope. Don't freak us out.
He climbs up the ladder.
And the guy touching the side of this thing, this guy's touching the big, broad side of this thing. This thing is so big and so heavy and hard, when he presses up against it, it doesn't budge. It doesn't move an inch. So this guy, he thinks it's a wall. And the guy just below that, he's got his arms around this part here. That feels like a tree trunk, gentlemen.
He snags a few letters.
There's another one, and another, and another. It's four tree trunks, guys. And the guy on top of this thing, I don't know why there was a guy on top of this thing, but he's up there, he's feeling around, and he feels this part here. It feels kind of leathery, shaped like a fan. Oh, there's two of them. It's like two big fans, guys. Anyways, the point being, these guys argue amongst themselves for quite a while, and it was not until they learned to communicate and work together that they were able to, you know, see the thing they're all touching is just an elephant. Now, this is an old story. There's lots of versions of this really old story from all around the world. I have read every version of this story I could get my hands on, and I've noticed every version of this story has one thing in common. There's not a single version of this story that takes into consideration what this experience must have been like for the elephant. Think about it from its perspective for just a moment. Imagine you are standing alone in a field, minding your own business, and six perverts come out of nowhere and start fondling you.
An animation plays of six sausage-like creatures rubbing an elephant.
And then they start arguing about what you are, and they can't decide. They can't figure it out. So they form a really creepy committee, and they discuss what you are, and they come back and go, hey, we talked about it. We figured it out. You're an elephant. Elephant? What if they're wrong? I mean, they aren't blind. Or in this instance, what if they were right in the first place? What if these blind guys didn't stumble across an elephant? What if they really did stumble across a magical creature? Something that had a snake for a nose, and tree trunks for legs, and a wall for a body, and then they convinced each other it was just an elephant. And worse than that, what if they could convince it was just an elephant? And then what if this magical creature didn't have someone around who knew it, someone who saw it for what it really was and loved it enough to say, no, they're all wrong and you're more than that.
He gapes at the ceiling.
I don't know. Maybe that's why we don't see those types of magical creatures roaming around anymore.
The drawing of the creature with a snake trunk, wooden legs, and a torso made of a brick wall painted pink, blue, and yellow shrinks into a gray elephant with downcast eyes. It turns and lumbers into its background, which is made up of various handwriting.
Reflection, please join me on the stage.
A montage shows viewers on different nights hobbling through the audience and onto the stage. They each shake Derek's hand and sit in a chair that faces the crowd.
Hi. Pleasure to meet you. Take a seat. I'm going to grab my chair. I will explain what's happening. I've been doing my best. I've been doing my damnedest to keep an antiquated form of communication from going extinct. In other words, I've been having letters sent to me, and I have...
He sits next to a bald man.
I have enough here for almost everyone, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because each day, each performance, we only get to open one. And today, you have been selected to decide which of these we're going to open. So please go through, decide on one you'd like to open, and keep it for yourself.
They sort through the stack of letters that Derek took from this mail sorter display.
This one.
Okay, I'll take the rest. I'm just going to point out a few things that you can see right now that most of them can't. First of all, you may have noticed all of these are actually addressed to me, to Derek Delgadio, care of the Daryl Roth Theater. That's me. That's this place. Second, you may have noticed all of the return addresses have been removed. And finally, if you turn it over on the back, you'll see this is cousin, friend, what did you say?
Sister.
Sister.
Grandfather.
Grandfather. Sibling. Do you have any siblings?
Yes.
This is a rude question. Do you have any friends?
I think so.
You think so? Okay, good. I have to ask. What did you say?
Father.
Father. Do you have a father?
I do.
Is he here with you tonight?
He is not.
Perfect.
He turns to face a frizzy-haired woman.
Okay.
She shrinks in her seat.
Freak, two things are about to happen. These two things are going to happen almost simultaneously. One of these things you will see, and the other thing we will see. Here's what you are about to see happen. Right now you're holding an envelope, and presumably inside of that envelope is a folded card or piece of paper. But in a moment, you're going to open that up, you're going to unfold whatever's in there, and when you do, you're going to see this thing transform into a handwritten letter to you from your father, from your friend, from your nephew, from your son, from your cousin, from your sister, from your child. None of us will see that. Only she will see that. What the rest of us will see, in my opinion, it's...
Derek exaggerates a frown.
It's better. In a moment, you're going to open that up, and when you see this thing transform, we get to see you, the reflection, the conceptual artist, the teacher, the pediatrician, the lieutenant, the unicorn, the dog lover, the fighter, transform into something else.
The different people scrutinize him.
Okie dokie.
He gets out of his chair.
You don't even need to read that aloud. That's just for you to read. But we are going to watch. I will be right here if you need anything at any moment.
A middle-aged man nods, followed by a woman shrugging. A montage of people opening their letter as Derek stands behind them. After opening the page, a man glances back at Derek and smiles. Another man looks at the letter and tries to keep himself from laughing.
Oh, what? No.
A woman's jaw drops as she reads it. A man gapes as his eyes move across the page. Three people giggle at their letters. A woman and man grin, then hold their hands over their mouth as they read. A woman focuses on the letter and mouths a word. She looks away and rubs away a tear. Another woman folds the letter and rubs the wet parches below her eyes. A woman rubs her eyes with her knuckle and brushes back her hair. Tears fall from a woman's face as she looks at her lap. The reflection lady rubs a tissue across her eyes. Derek leans towards her from her side. Her body begins to shake as she holds the tissue onto both of her clenched eyelids. Derek holds his hand over her shoulder as a woman in the crowd gets teary-eyed. The woman holds her eyes shut and presses the tissues to her closed lips. She shakes her head as Derek places his fingers onto the back of her shoulder.
Moment for yourself. Are you comfortable sharing this? I can help if you need.
Squinting with tears in her eyes, she inspects the letter.
I don't understand.
I know. Please stay.
A man stands as Derek removes the chair. His eyes are glazed over as he rubs his nose. He looks at the paper as he unfolds it. He gapes and tilts his head toward the audience. He stares down at the letter and shakes his head.
To the Harry Gary gorilla, despite being away from home for 10 years, I want you to know you're still a big part of my life and very big inspiration.
You are everything to me. You are amazing to be around because you are smart, funny, and beautiful inside and out.
I'm not sure that I've ever completely conveyed to you how proud I am of you. More than anyone I've ever met. You have a strong moral core and the courage of your convictions. Whether you are standing up for the little guy against the big football players, like you did in college, or starting your venture to teach adolescents how to live an ethical Jewish life.
I am truly lucky to have found a friend as awesome as you so late in life when it gets really hard to do so.
I want to tell you how much I admire your independence and your strength, especially to get through the tough times in life. I love our common love of dachshunds and Chardonnay.
Just in case you haven't noticed, your mama is proud of you. And then she signed at 63, just family shorthand for I love you.
I look forward to many more happy years of friendship and worldwide travels together. Love, Ducky. P.S. There's nothing like El Baño at the 717.
El Baño?
That's the bathroom we used to get high in.
Derek bends over, smiling. The reflection lady reads hers.
You once said to me, Dad, what color is God's skin? Your mother and I said to you, it's black, brown, it's yellow. It is red, it is white. Every man's the same in the good Lord's sight. To your mother and me, you have always embodied this message to the world. Love, Dad.
She glances at Derek.
And he's dying of Parkinson's. And is in the last stages, and every time I see him, I say goodbye to him because I don't know if I'm gonna see him again.
A man in the crowd rubs his glazed eyes. The woman stares at Derek with creased brows.
I don't know if y'all saw the moment. I no longer see a reflection on this stage. I see someone's daughter. I no longer see a free thinker on this stage. I see somebody's son. I no longer see an organizer on this stage. I see somebody's friend. I no longer see a fighter on this stage. I see somebody's father. I don't know when you plan on seeing your dad or talking to him, but in the meantime, I mean this. Take a moment, get a piece of paper, write him back.
Write her back.
Write her back.
Write him back.
It always means a lot more.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
They shake his hand. The reflection lady wraps her arms around his back. After a moment, they part and Derek gestures to the audience. The woman steps off stage. A man returns to a seat where a woman is standing and she hugs him. Derek plods center stage and faces the wall. Hands on his hips, he hangs his head and nods.
Mr. Tomorrow. Hi, Mr. Tomorrow. Pack of shit, it's time to go.
A montage shows Tomorrow people rising from their seats and skirting past people in the audience. They step on stage where Derek holds the tome.
Thank you very much for doing this. We're gonna throw you out right now. I don't want you to feel like you're being excluded from this. It's easy to feel that way in this particular moment, but I assure you it is quite the contrary, because in a few moments, all of this, it's gonna end for all of them. And whether they all know it or not, when this ends, they will have decided what it is. and they will have decided what I am. But not you. But not you. But not you. But not you. For you, this is going to remain a mystery a little bit longer, and this story is going to continue now because you're going to take it with you. And that means it could be whatever you want it to be. I'd like you to write down what you saw here up until this moment, just as you saw, like a recap for us. And then more importantly, I want you to imagine how this story ends. It could be anything you want. Give us an ending. I will have you read that imaginary ending to the nice people that come tomorrow. And then someday, if someone were to read all of this, it's going to tell them an honest story of everything that has ever happened here, even though it's composed entirely of information that is both real and imagined. I'm grateful you're part of it. I'll see you tomorrow.
Derek hands the book to the people. They exit stage left where the woman in black escorts them through a dark passage. The Rulatista lights up. The display with the balance scale glows. The stage floor and lower wall remain bright as the light fades further up the wall. Darkness eclipses the top of the wall as a circular blue glow covers the space with the displays. He takes a lone playing card from the table and then picks up both stacks of labeled cards. He steps next to the scale and taps the two stacks together. He places the combined stack on one platform. The platform falls, raising the other. Derek folds his hands in front of him and steps back. He watches as the Rulatista's light fades, then nods. He regards the scale, then turns toward the audience. His eyes dart to the floor and then through the crowd. He reaches into his vest pocket and takes the portion of the card that reads, "I am." He places the card on the other platform and the scales become level. All the displays light up as the white glow from the floor creeps up the wall until it encompasses every panel. Derek is dark by comparison as he steps center stage while examining the wall. The displays go dark and the shadow returns to the top of the wall. He nods at the displays and faces the crowd.
Before you came in here, there was a wall.
The wall of cards passed by.
On that wall, there were a bunch of cards, and a lot of you probably had fun with it, chose something like ninja. But others may have taken it seriously. Maybe you chose something you feel reflects who you really are in this world. I'd really like to be seen by others. If you're one of those few people, please stand.
More than half of the people rise from their seats. A man helps a woman to her feet as the couple next to her stay seated and chat. A man whispers to the woman standing beside him. She rests her head on his shoulder.
I remember reading that true identity, and not just identity. True identity is that which exists within one's own heart and is seen by another. Honestly, I have no idea if that's true outside these walls these days, but in here?
He looks at a man.
I see a bartender.
A grin grows on his face.
And a curiosity.
The woman to the left of him smiles.
And a heavyweight.
To the woman's left, the corners on a man's mouth curl up. Derek looks to his right.
And an individual. And an achiever. A singer.
A woman swivels her head to the lady next to her as she smiles.
The truth teller.
A blonde woman closes her eyes and gapes as she raises her head.
A soother. And a lover. And a stargazer. They're gonna regret it, the one that got away.
A young man mouths to the woman beside her.
An explorer. And a good Samaritan.
An older man bows his head and raises a trembling fist to his lips.
And a vegan. An alchemist.
A woman gapes, looks down, and presses her lips together.
an independent, a maker, and a good time. If I'm right so far, you may be seated.
Everyone standing in the first few rows sits. Half of the rows remain standing. Derek steps closer to the audience.
A visionary.
A man smiles, eyes the floor while mouthing a word, and sits. Derek smirks as he focuses on a man with glasses.
Keep up the good work.
The man falls into his chair and gazes ahead in thought.
A disruptor. A feminist.
A woman sits, teary-eyed.
An iconoclast.
The man beside her sits and puts an arm around her.
A journalist.
Derek's gaze travels to a woman with blowing hair in the back row.
Counselor.
She smiles and rests into her chair.
A life coach. A fish out of water. A public servant. A reconciler.
People fall into their seats like attentive school children. Derek walks further up the aisle to the back row.
An artist.
A bearded man bends forward and sits.
A midnight toker.
An older woman with curly hair laughs and plops down. The young man next to her gawks at Derek and swallows.
An introvert. Sorry to make you stand.
He glances up at Derek before sitting. Derek turns and faces a woman standing next to him. She smiles as she peers into his eyes.
You're like me. An accident.
She plants herself back into her seat.
A traveler. A mystic.
A young man and woman grin and sit. Derek rotates to see Bill Gates smiling at him.
A leader.
Bill plops down into his chair. Derek looks at a corner of the back row.
A skeptic.
A man in a leather vest plants himself down.
An anthropologist. A nurse. A makeup artist.
Three young blonde girls fall in their seats. Derek nods at an older woman who stands beside them. She nods back.
A single mother. An adventurer.
A man with a white and black beard nods and sits. Derek turns to a man with a honeycomb t-shirt and red receding hair. He puts his hands on his hips and stares at him. The man blinks and frowns at Derek. Derek looks at the floor, nods, then raises his head.
Nobody.
The man lowers himself into his seat.
An intellectual.
Tears begin to well in his eyes.
A reader.
Derek steps to an older woman with black hair. She gazes at him with a slight smile. He frowns at her with a creased brow, puts his hand on her shoulder, and whispers in her ear. She grins, nods, and perches in her chair.
A real mensch.
A woman's face twists into a smile.
A breath of fresh air.
Another laughs and falls in her seat.
Welcome, our immigrant.
An older man nods and raises his brows. Derek scrutinizes a man in a baseball cap.
My brother.
The man nods and falls into his chair.
An accountant.
His brother releases a heavy sigh.
Hey, Grandpa. A New Yorker. A masochist.
The woman smiles and raises her brows.
An Adonis.
He cocks his head and smiles.
An exhibitionist.
She points and winks.
A unicorn.
A tall man smirks.
A real catch.
An old lady with large framed glasses laughs and settles. Derek looks to a woman with short hair and a horseshoe ear piercing. She smiles as tears well in her eyes.
Hi, Mom.
She walks up the steps and they embrace each other. Derek scrutinizes a woman with tears streaming down her face.
An entomologist.
She closes her eyes and nods.
My teacher.
A man with long white hair places his hand over his heart.
A shaman.
A man's smile grows toothy. A woman grins at Derek.
A multitude.
She plants herself down. A woman beams at Derek.
Everything.
She closes her eyes. A woman gives him a piercing stare.
Howdy, pilgrim.
She smiles. A woman with pearls stares.
Your highness.
She shuts her eyes and grins.
My advocate.
A teary-eyed older woman sits.
One of a kind. A lone wolf.
A man raises his brow and sits.
A searcher.
Larry Wilmore.
An oracle. An experimenter. Life of the party. My good luck charm. My confidant. A connector. A fixer. A dreamer. A dog lover. A believer. Possibility. An interpreter. An organizer.
His eyes move to the next.
And you, miss, you are a storyteller. Please sit down.
He looks down with dark sunken eyes and everything goes dark. The Rulatista lights up with its hand at its side. Right when the display goes dark, a light shines down on Derek. Grimacing, he nods rapidly.
And I am...
He pivots himself towards the wall, which is now cast in complete blackness. Derek gazes at the floor. A harsh light hits the back of his head while his face is cast in shadow. Teary-eyed, he wipes his nose. Tears fly from his cheeks as he twists his head up. More droplets roll down his cheeks.
The Rulatista. Because that's how he saw me. And then that's how I started to see myself. And now I come here day after day after day, and I stand in a dark room full of a bunch of strangers, letting them decide the value of my life while I load up six chambers and attempt to defy some odds. So yeah, I am the Rulatista.
He stares off agape. His lips quiver. He shakes his head and his eyes dart. He steps down the aisle into the stage.
But I also know that I'm a son. And I know that even though I am a son, I know I'm also an orphan. And I know that I am a sailor, even though I've never left the shores. And honestly, I don't expect anyone to be able to decipher whether I'm a dog or a wolf, because I understand for most people, it's inconceivable that I'm both, but I don't need anyone to see all the things that make me what I am to know I'm more than just an elephant. I'm more than just one thing, because I'm not just defined by what you see. I'm also defined by all the things you will never see.
His eyes search the audience.
We all are. And I see that now.
A montage of him closing his eyes and bringing his forefinger to his temple with his gun-shaped hand. An orange spotlight shines on Derek. The table and the faint light of the displays can be made out on the dark stage.
Click.
Light hits the stage as all the displays except for the Rulatista fall to the floor like paper. The stage goes dark except for a light on Derek. He turns to the glowing Rulatista. The image goes dark. Smartphone footage plays. The camera bobs down a busy city sidewalk at night. At a corner next to the light post is the gold brick.
Holy fucking shit!
Directed by Frank Oz, smartphone footage plays. A cloudy sky looms over a brown building.
We are on the corner of 25th and 7th. There's a golden brick here. We're taking it.
Written and created by Derek Delgadio. The corner of 46th and Madison.
Okay, this is the craziest part of my life. The brick is right here.
The brick leans on the corner signpost. Produced by Glenn Kino, Vanessa Lauren, and Jake Friedman. The brick book lies under a trash bag on the corner of 42nd Street and 6th Avenue. Executive producers Stephen Colbert and Evelyn McGee Colbert. The brick lies at the base of a signpost just above a slushy pile of brown snow. Executive producer Daryl Roth. A hand reaches down to pluck the golden brick from a gum-smeared sidewalk. Executive producer Tom Werner. Two men stand at the corner. One reaches down and picks up the brick.
Can you take a photo of us?
Co-executive producers Tom Purcell and Chris Licht. Someone films a woman holding up the brick and taking a photo of it with her phone. A man in a suit squats and waves the brick at the camera. Another man smiles as he takes a selfie with the brick. A man holding a bag waits to cross the street. The brick is revealed leaning against the signpost, a few inches from his foot. In white text, in and of itself. Credits roll. Thank you. Copyright 2020 In and of Itself LLC. All rights reserved. In and of Itself LLC is the author and creator of this motion picture for the purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto, and for the purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Distributed by Hulu LLC. Audio description provided by Point360 and voiced by Kathleen Finn. An animation of fish leaping out of water and eating a heron. Spartina. Letters come together outside in the moonlight. Hulu Originals.